you remember a time when childhood was analog? Today's kids seem to tap, swipe, and pinch before they've learned to ride a bike, grip a pencil, or even tie their shoelaces. And as modern parents, this presents a concerning reality. You see, we have no frame of reference about what it means to raise digital kids. My name is Dr. Christy Goodwin. I'm a children's technology and development expert and also a mum who wrestles with the remote control and the iPad from her children's clutches. I take the guesswork and the guilt out of raising digital kids, and I arm parents with research-based information about what young children really need to thrive online and offline in the digital age. Like you, I've wrestled with my child trying to retrieve my iPad or my smartphone, and I've been left wondering, is the use of the iPad and smartphones appropriate? Is it healthy and safe for young children? I'm thrilled that you've invested in the Appy Kids, Appy Parents workshop. The genesis of this workshop was born out of my concerns as a mum, first and foremost. I saw how my eldest son's use of the iPad could become problematic at times. He refused to turn off the iPad, we'd have the disastrous techno tantrum, and he became quite transfixed with particular types of things that he was watching. And this really raised some concerns for me as a children's technology learning and development researcher. So as a researcher, I went in quest of the information, in quest of the facts and the research and the science. And what I've done with this digital workshop is collate the latest research about what parents need to know about how children's use of the iPad is impacting on their health, development, and well-being. There are so many myths, misnomers, and misinformation when it comes to raising digital kids. And the use of the iPad is certainly a contentious issue. On one hand, we're told to avoid this screen, that it's harmful and poses developmental dangers to our children. But on the flip side, we can see the potential with this device. When it's used in the right ways, it can really support our children's learning and development. So modern parents are faced with this digital dilemma. Do I use the iPad with my child, or should I avoid using it, and do they fall behind in this digital world? I'm going to take the guesswork and the guilt out of children and young children aged 2 to 12 years using the iPad. Instead, I'm going to arm you with the latest research and information about what we actually know about iPads and how we can use them in healthy and helpful ways with young children. Now, there's no denying there are potential pitfalls if we don't use the iPad in healthy and helpful ways with young children. We are flirting with some developmental dangers, particularly as it relates to their vision and their hearing and their musculoskeletal development, if we're using these devices excessively or inappropriately. So my aim for this digital workshop is to arm you with facts, not fears, about what you need to know about the iPad. Because whether you love it or loathe it, perhaps you're hoping for the days of the chalkboard to return, the iPad's here to stay. It's not going to be uninvented. So as parents, we need to find healthy and helpful ways to use this technology and at the same time mitigate or minimize any potential harmful effects. And that's what I'm going to do. I have gone in quest of the research and the science, and I have translated that into practical and digestible information for parents so that we can harness this technology in ways that will not sacrifice our children's health, well-being, and development. I hope this workshop serves you well and it alleviates some of the guesswork and the guilt when it comes to raising digital kids. Thank you again for investing. I know that investing your time and money in your child's health and well-being is a significant investment, but I am hoping that this resource serves you well and arms you with the information that you need so that you can make empowered and informed choices about how to best use this tool. Thank you.
So how can you get the most out of this digital workshop? It would be lovely if we could all sit down uninterrupted and watch it from the beginning to the end. But as a parent myself, I understand this isn't probable and it's probably near impossible. And the good thing with this workshop, because it's digital, you can literally press pause and resume it when it's convenient for you. So you can digest it in small chunks and pause and rewatch it. Something that I found really helpful myself when I've done some online courses and training is to have a little notebook and jot down any pertinent ideas, anything that I perhaps want to follow up or anything that's particularly interesting. Also note down any particular times in any of the videos or the audios where you perhaps think it's worthwhile for your partner or somebody else to listen to it. So please feel free to dive in, rewatch particular things, take out of it what's pertinent for you. Remember, there are some PDF checklists and sheets that go along with this workshop. So in addition to the video and the audio training, there are the PDF workshops. So let's dive in. Do you perhaps look a little bit like this frazzled dad? We're often concerned as modern parents that we're raising glassy-eyed children who appear to have digital appendages, the iPad or smartphone that's constantly attached to their hands. A study that was conducted in 2015 by the Action for Children group found that one in four parents are struggling to control their child's screen time. And I actually think that that statistic may be a little underrepresentative of what's really happening. I actually think three in four parents are lying. I think most parents are really struggling with this idea of screen time. And one of the reasons is, as parents, we've got no frame of reference. We didn't grow up having a digitalized childhood. We had analog childhoods. We stared at the sky, not at screens. So this is a completely foreign way for us to raise kids. And so our natural instinct is to fret and to worry. But we need to remember that just because it's new and just because it's different doesn't automatically mean that it's bad. And that's what I'm hoping that this workshop arms you with the information, with the facts, so that you can figure out healthy and helpful ways to use this without it encroaching on children's childhood. We really need to think, and I'm going to talk about children's seven basic building blocks, their seven basic developmental needs. We really need to think of children's developmental needs and then consider how their time with devices like iPads can either help or harm this process. Because as you'll see in this video, the iPad really is just a tool. So we need to teach our kids about how to use it in the right sorts of ways. So we're raising screenagers. As modern parents, we often talk to our kids about recording a TV show or hanging up the phone and they look at us strangely. Their childhood is just so different to ours. And because we've got no frame of reference, because we had an analog childhood, and because we're given such conflicting advice, we're left in this state of concern and confusion. We're worried, we're bamboozled, and it's really hard to try and figure out the best way forward. So I want to ask you at the moment, and if you're listening to this in the audio, I apologize because the visual really helps here. But here I've got a photo of the TV sitcom Modern Family. And in it, we've got a scene of a fairly familiar family situation, a whole lot of family members tethered to their digital devices. And on the left, we've got Claire Dunphy, who looks petrified and overwhelmed. She's really concerned. I often refer to Claire as the drone parent. So she's constantly monitoring and worrying about her kids' screen time. She's really fearful of it. Claire's secretly hoping that this technology will disappear. She's the bury your head in the sand kind of parent. And then we've got Phil in the background, and Phil's got his headphones on, looking rather cool, and he's really tech savvy. He's excited. He can see the positive potential. And then we've got Hayley in the front, and Hayley is perhaps too connected to even notice about what's going on around her. And I think this is a really great image because it sort of captures many modern parents. We're either really fearful of it, and hoping that it disappears and just trying to weather the storm more or less. Or perhaps we're a bit like Phil and we're really excited about it, but we're just not sure how to use it with our kids. My aim in this workshop is to get you feeling a little bit, if you're not that way already, feeling a bit more like Phil, a little bit less like Claire. But if you're Phil, perhaps to take off, he looks in this image like he's got some rose-coloured glasses on, to take off his rose-coloured glasses and actually look at how do we use these devices in healthy and helpful ways? Because to be really honest, if we don't use them correctly, they do have some, there are some potential pitfalls with kids using them. However, having said that, when we do use them in intentional and in developmentally appropriate ways, the iPad is a brilliant tool for supporting children's learning and healthy development. So I'm often asked, is technology really changing our kids? You know, or is this just a storm in a teacup? Are we worried just because it's new and different and different to our childhood? So I often say, and this visual does it justice, I think, is technology changing us as adults? And here we've got a popular scene, a rock concert. In the 1990s, we had hands flailing in the air. We had people really immersed in the moment. And in 2010, the same sort of rock concert, but it was being viewed behind a sea of screens. And this is a really common scene. I know when I went to my son's preschool concert last year, I watched it at the back. I had a toddler with me who didn't want to sit still. So we stood at the back watching the preschool concert and again behind a sea of screens. Technology and devices are changing how we as adults, how we interact, how we sleep, how we work, how we socialize and how we play. And children aren't immune to this change either. As adults, we're checking our phones 150 times a day on average, and we're consuming the equivalent of 174 newspapers of data every single day. So it's changing our attention spans. It's changing our capacity to memorize information. As an adult, are you able to memorize more than 3 phone numbers at the moment? We're literally drowning in information. And it's changing us. And I think this is a really pertinent example. We'd like to think our brains are a lot more sophisticated. I often ask parents in my workshops, are you suffering from phantom vibration syndrome? That's the tingling feeling that your phone might be ringing and it's nowhere near your physical body. Now, parents often laugh at this, but it's prime evidence that technology is changing our physiological response. It's changing our brains. And if we stop and think about young children and their developing brains, it's also changing them. So do we need to be concerned? Are kids really spending that much time with technology? As this infographic shows us, yes, they are. And these are considered by somewhat old data. We don't yet have the most up-to-date data at hand. But what we know that back in 2013, the average 0 to 8-year-old was spending just shy of 2 hours a day with screen media. Now, this is quite a significant amount of time if we think we've got, some babies and toddlers in this age range. For 8 to 18-year-olds, the average amount of time with screen media is 7.38 hours a day. Now, just to update this study, another study was conducted in 2015 by Common Sense Media, and they actually found that tweens and teenagers, so that preteen window, our 8 to 12-year-olds were spending approximately 5 hours and 55 minutes a day with screen media, not including their screen time. And this is really significant amount of time. It's important to point out that this included what we call multitasking, media multitasking. So they may have been using the iPad for an hour and watching TV and that at the same time, and that was considered 2 hours of their time. So technology is having a really profound impact on our kids. In this workshop, I'm going to explain why our otherwise very well-adjusted child has a techno tantrum. Why do they refuse to switch off these devices? Are they addicted? And we'll dive into this in some of the modules in this workshop. We have to be really mindful that the iPad won't be uninvented. So whether you love it, although that it's here to stay. So we have to find the healthy and helpful ways to use it. We need to teach our children, and that's the aim of this workshop, how to manage technology and form healthy relationships with it. We don't want the technology managing our children. So we'll look at this. Why is it that our child refuses to hand over the iPad, and what practical strategies can we implement so that we can give them the iPad without tears and tantrums at the end of it? And I will give you some practical strategies around that. So this scene will become a thing of the past. Really important that we remember that the iPad's just another tool in our toolkit. It's not a toy. We really need to teach our kids that it's just another tool. iPads are neither good nor bad. I'm often asked, are iPads, good for kids? They're just a tool. It really depends on how it's used. just like we wouldn't give kids a book, a traditional book, and expect them to learn how to read with it, it's what we do with the book that makes it a worthwhile learning tool. It's exactly the same thing with an iPad. It's what we do with it. It's what apps we use with it. It's about how we engage with kids with it. Really important distinction here, and it sounds quite trivial, but it's really quite profound, is that children learn with an iPad, they don't learn from it. So it's really important that we think about the sorts of experiences we provide for young kids on the iPad. I love this quote by Warren Buckleitner from Children's Technology Review. He says, technology is a bit like fertilizer. Use a little bit and the right type and the plant will blossom. Use too much and the wrong type and you'll burn the plant. And it's so true. It really is. And it's such a simple response, but it really is about a balanced approach. The iPad isn't necessarily harmful, but if we used the wrong types of apps or we use too much of it, it certainly can be. So before we go any further, I want to introduce myself. I was a teacher turned academic. And I studied the impact of technology on young children's learning and development. And then I experienced life's greatest equalizer. I became a mum for the first time. And I realized just how confusing and overwhelming it was for modern parents to navigate the digital world. You know, there are books and information out there on sleeping and settling and feeding and dealing with tantrums and behavior and children not listening, but so little accurate information when it comes to screen time. And it was actually an experience I had with my child's healthcare nurse that spurred me on to start my business. It was an early Monday morning. I was an exhausted first-time mum. I'd had the mandatory coffee first thing in the morning. I packed my son Taj into the car and off we went to the child healthcare clinic for our 6-month check. In Australia, we have something called the Blue Book, and it's basically a developmental check with a healthcare nurse. And we arrived and I met with June, who was the child healthcare nurse, and we went through everything. And apart from me being sleep deprived, as most first-time mums are, everything seemed to be, you know, fine with Taja's health and development. And at the end, June asked me, so what apps are you using with Taj? Now, I was so sleep deprived, I was almost, unable to provide a coherent response. And I asked again, must have had that confused look on my face. And she said, what apps are you using? You know, it's really important to introduce him to apps that will teach him some letters and some sounds and some nursery rhymes. And now Taj was born only 6 months after the iPad came out. So apps were still a relatively new concept. And I was absolutely floored. He was a child healthcare professional asking me what apps I was using with my then 6-month-old son. And it hit me, although it was kind of a delayed response, that parents are really struggling to find accurate information. We've got healthcare professionals not giving us accurate information. 6-month-old babies don't need to be using apps to learn letters, shapes, numbers and colours. So ironically, I went home and composed my thoughts after having another coffee and getting Taj to sleep. And I started a social media campaign about babies need laps, not apps. And ironically, that social media campaign went viral. And it really hit home just how much parents are craving research-based information. So that's my passion. My passion is in the research. But I'd become that frustrated academic, as I alluded to before. I could see all this wonderful research being conducted in universities amongst academics, but it got locked behind academic gates. It got shared in conferences and in journal articles. But parents and educators don't have time to access that. So my job is to be the conduit. I sort of link the research and I translate it into practical and digestible information for parents and educators. We're trying to figure out this digital parenting on the fly. So I want to at least arm parents with research-based information about whether technology is healthy or harmful for kids. So by the end of this digital workshop, I want to provide some solutions to your digital dilemmas. I want to take the guesswork and the guilt out of raising kids. And I want to assure you that their time spent with an iPad or another iDevice isn't necessarily toxic or taboo. I want to eradicate your fears and arm you with the facts. I want you to walk out of this seminar, a workshop, feeling a little bit more like Phil Dunphy. As I mentioned before, whether we love it or loathe it, the iPad is here to stay. It won't become uninvented. So we have to help our kids form healthy habits and minimize some of the potential pitfalls. I also want to assure you that I am arming you with the research. I am a children's technology learning and development researcher, and as I mentioned, also a mum. But I have been involved in numerous studies that have examined the educational impact of iPads from preschoolers right up to secondary school students. And I have conducted these studies in Australia for the New South Wales Department of Education and Communities, and have conducted some independent research as well. And I have looked at everything from how the design of an app shapes the way children learn to the educational benefits associated with children using iPads. So I'm well placed in terms of the research, but I also wear that practical mum hat and understand some of the practical issues and dilemmas that face modern parents. So if I was to sum up my overall message in all the workshops and speaking work that I do, and in my book, I guess it's these three core messages, is that when it comes to raising digital kids, first and foremost, we have to think about what are their basic developmental needs? What is it that kids really need to thrive, not just survive in this digital age? And then we start to look at how technology can impact and shape those basic needs. Sometimes it can support their needs, it can help them with their developmental needs. But if it's not used carefully or if it's used excessively, technology can certainly erode and damage children's development. So it's about firstly identifying their needs, then matching their experiences to that. The second one is about boundaries. Having firm boundaries around what kids can watch on screens, when they can watch it and for how long. Really, really critical. Technology has a very, I'm careful to use this word, addictive pull, and we'll look at why that is today in this workshop. But we need to make sure we have firm parameters around kids' screen use, and we'll talk about that in our sixth module in this workshop, all about managing tablets without tantrums. In boundaries, it's also about our use of technology. We're having firm boundaries about when we pull out our smartphone or our tablet device, and we'll touch on that throughout as well. And the third key message, and again, it sounds so simple, but often so hard to implement, and that is about balance. We have to make sure we balance kids' screen time with their green time. We have to make sure that kids tap, swipe, and pinch at a screen and run around, climb, roll, and explore outside. We really need to strike a meaningful balance so that our kids aren't constantly tethered to technology. They need to have white space, time where they can let their creativity and their imagination run wild, time when they can play and explore outside and in unstructured ways. So it really is about striking that meaningful balance. And hopefully by the end of the workshop, you'll understand what sorts of meaningful experiences kids can have with an iPad, but also about the sorts of things that they can do away from the screen. The final thing I want to say in this introductory part of the workshop, and this is really, really important, I'm not here to should on you. This is not about how you should be using the iPad. Remember, my aim is to provide you with research-based information so you can make informed decisions about what works for you. And I know as a parent, sometimes I just need to let some advice slide. It just doesn't stick with our family, doesn't fit our situation, doesn't work for a particular child, and that's fine. We need to use our intuition and our judgment to figure out what advice is meaningful and relevant to us. But I love this this quote by Maya Angelou. I did then what I knew how to do. Now that I know better, I do better. And please do not riddle yourself with guilt and concern if you haven't been doing some of the things I suggest in this workshop. You don't know what you don't know. So again, remember, I'm arming you with the information so that you can make powerful choices. I also want to be completely honest and say I don't always get this right or perfect every time. There are times when I admit that I do use the iPad as the digital babysitter, and that's not the ideal model, but sometimes that works. And as a parent, I understand sometimes we've exhausted every other trick and tip and tool in our toolkit, and sometimes the iPad works as the perfect way to placate an upset child, but we just need to be mindful about not doing that all the time. And we'll talk about that as we progress throughout the workshop, but I thought it was important to reiterate that there's no one right way to do it. It's about taking this information, running it through your filter, and knowing what works for your situation. So let's dive in further and look at some of the reasons as to why iPads have been so rapidly adopted. So in this section, I want to introduce you into this idea of digital kids. I'm going to address when we should be introducing iPads. I'm often asked at what age is it appropriate to introduce children to iPads. I'm going to talk about why we need to use them carefully with young children. Early childhood, as many of us know, is a really critical stage for children's brain development and their physical development. So at least taking a cautious approach as to why we need to use them intentionally and carefully around young children. And then exploring what is it that makes iPads so appealing, and why have they been rapidly adopted by kids? What are some of the positive potential? So many kids seem to be born with digital appendages these days. They love using touchscreen devices. But is it healthy or helpful? Is it really shaping their brain architecture and impacting on their health and well-being? Yes, it is, and in really profound ways. Now, we're, in some regards, conducting what I call a bit of a living experiment. We don't yet know what the long-term impacts are of these touchscreen devices on children's health, well-being, and development. Remember, the iPad was only introduced in 2010. So what we do, and what I do in particular, is take what we do know about children's development and the ways in which they learn and their health. And we start with this platform. So what is it that children, what are children's basic unchanging developmental needs? And we've got years and years, a really established and robust body of research that tells us exactly what kids need. The neuroscience is also confirming this. And then once we've got this platform, we then look at how technology is either helping or harming these developmental needs that children have. So let's look at this first idea of when do we introduce iPads. Now, there is no magical age. As we all know, as parents, our children all develop really differently, especially if you've got multiple children, you realize how different they can be. I say to parents, err on the side of caution. There's absolutely no hurry to dunk your child in the digital stream. We have no research evidence yet to show that the early introduction of screens is really beneficial. And in fact, we know that sometimes the premature introduction of screens, especially before around the age of 2 years, 2 to 3 years, can actually be detrimental. So I'm not saying don't use screens before 2 years of age. And we'll touch on what the screen recommendations are in a later section in module 6 of this workshop. But it's really important that we don't hurry. There's absolutely no rush. And one of the reasons is because we have some research that tells us that young children often suffer from what we call the video deficit and the transfer deficit. And the video deficit tells us that it takes children learn less from screens, so even from interactive screens like tablets, than they do from real people and real objects. So they might still be learning from a screen, but it usually takes them about 2.5 times longer to learn something from a screen than what they would a real life object. And they often recall it for much shorter periods of time. So screen learning is possible, but remember, not as effective as what young, particularly, and we're talking here, between at least until children are about 2 years of age. The transfer deficit, remember, it means taking children longer to learn from a screen than from having interactions with real people. So they find it difficult to transfer what they've learnt on a screen to real life situations and scenarios. So children don't actually develop what we call symbolic competence. So that's understanding what is represented on a 2D screen to a 3D context until they're usually between 2 and 3 years of age. So really important, there's no hurry. If I was to prescribe, and I'm reluctant to do this, but if I was to prescribe an age at when we could, safely, and I use that in inverted commas, safely introduce iPads, I would say it's usually around the age of 2. Young children don't necessarily make meaning from what's on that screen. But if you are going to use, and it's fine, some people use their smartphones and tablets with children younger than 2, help them to make meaning. Try and use the iPad with them. It's called co-viewing, and we'll talk about that throughout this workshop. Try and use the iPad with them so that they can connect what they're seeing on the screen to their real life experiences or to books that they've read. So there's no hurry whatsoever to introduce iPads. We're possibly flirting with some developmental dangers if we introduce screens prematurely. So this is going to be brain science 101 in 2 minutes or less. In terms of what we know, the neuroscience tells us in terms of a child's brain architecture, their development, that it actually begins in the primitive part of the brain. And this is where children's sensory and motor regions of the brain are first developed. So these are the first parts of the brain to, for want of a better word, come online. This is why children suck things. This is why children are constantly moving. Their sensory and their motor regions of the brain are basically under construction. So this is the part of the brain that's really important. And this is why children need lots, young children here need lots of hands-on experiences, why they need rich interactions, why they need to move and explore and play. And so this part of the brain is developed usually in the first 2 to 3 years of life. Around the age of 3 to 4, brain development starts to shift towards the front of the brain called the prefrontal cortex. And this is basically your child's CEO. It's the brain's CEO, or the air traffic control system. And this part of the brain is responsible for a child's higher order thinking skills. So it's really, this is where their impulse control takes place, where their working memory and their mental flexibility, their problem solving. So it's really, really important that this part of the brain has ample time to develop. One of the preliminary concerns, particularly amongst psychologists and some other health professionals, is that if children are using screens at an early age or excessively, that sensory part of the brain can be overstimulated. So they're constantly processing sensory information. There's visuals on the iPads, there's sound effects, there's animations to process. At the same time, their motor region, remember the sensory and the motor regions are the first parts to get developed, is not having as much activity. They're not crawling and rolling and playing. And one of the concerning factors is that this prefrontal cortex, this CEO region, isn't yet fully developed, but this is the part of the brain that we need to operate in a digital world. I need impulse control so my attention isn't focusing on the flashing part of the screen, that I'm actually reading and concentrating on the story that I'm meant to. I need to have a really good working memory. If I need to know what happened 2 scenes prior on the iPad, I need to have a really good working memory. So one of the concerns about prematurely introducing screens to young children, again, very careful to do this under the age of 2 or 3, is that they don't yet have the brain architecture to cope with it. We know, for example, even older children find that this prefrontal cortex is still not fully developed. It actually doesn't come online fully developed until early 20s for females and late 20s for males. So it's really important that we use the iPads in really careful and intentional ways. So if parents were to read or believe the marketing hype, we're told to introduce screens early. Every aspect of childhood has become digitalized, so much so in this slide you can see we've got the iPotty. But do we really need to digitalize everything? Are there some aspects of childhood that don't need to be digitalized? And this is one of the pressing concerns for parents. Here we've got the Fisher-Price Activity Seat, and this was a iPad-holding baby bouncer that was marketed towards parents. And this is really concerning. The marketing claims for this particular product said that it could give your child, quote, a head start. They could learn their letters, shapes, and numbers and colors. Now, this was a product geared to 6 to 9 month parents of 6 to 9 month olds. This is not what young children need. So my takeaway message is don't be in a hurry to introduce screens early. Kids need real experiences and real interactions with real people to really benefit. If you are going to introduce screens early on, try to use them co-view, use them with your child, and try to help them to make meaning from what they're doing. So how much is safe? And we're really going to unpack this in Module 6 when I present what the current screen time guidelines are. But at the moment, we have screen time guidelines that are based on a child's chronological age. And at the moment, the current Australian guidelines suggest that children aged 0 to 2 years should have no more than no screen time whatsoever. For children aged 2 to 5 years, they should have a total of 1 hour of screen time a day. And for 5 to 12 year olds, it should be 1 to 2 hours a day. Now, before you panic, these guidelines are often unrealistic. A study came out in Australia that found the vast majority of Australian families are not adhering to these screen time limits. So my concern with these guidelines is that they're not actually based on empirical or scientifically tested research. So there are no safe thresholds. So there's nothing to suggest that 1 hour a day for 2 to 5 year olds is safe. So they haven't gone out and checked that anything over that hour is harmful. These guidelines come from what we call the displacement effect. So the research is worried about children's screen time displacing other worthwhile pursuits. And that's why at the very beginning of today's workshop, I talked about making sure we meet our children's basic developmental needs first. And I'm going to give you in Module 6 a formula. I know we like formulas as parents, but a formula to calculate safe screen time limits for your child. My concern with the chronological age range, as I said, is that they're not scientifically tested. Children all respond differently, so using a chronological age is not necessarily that helpful. And the research on the current guidelines is actually based on passive media, so television and DVDs. The iPad, when it's used in interactive ways, is definitely not passive. Not all screen time is created equal. An hour spent creating a digital book on the iPad is very different to an hour spent watching unboxing YouTube videos, for example. So instead, and my concern is that if we focus just on the how much piece, that we overlook some other really important considerations like what are kids doing on the iPad and when are they doing it? And we're really going to unpack that in this workshop as well. Having said that, I'm not for any moment suggesting that kids don't need limits. They definitely need time parameters. Remember, one of my other key messages right at the beginning was boundaries. Kids need boundaries and balance as well. So it's really important that we do place parameters around it, but we don't focus exclusively on just the how much piece. So why have iPads been voraciously consumed? Remember, they were only introduced in 2010. Some of the reasons is they're intuitive to use, really simple. We now know, and again, based on research, is that kids learn to tap, swipe, and pinch often before they've learned to ride a bike, grip a pencil, or tie their shoelaces. iPads are really appealing for young kids in particular because they don't need to know how to master a mouse or other skills required with a traditional computer. There are a plethora of apps out there that appeal to young children. And technology and apps offer endless choice. And the brain, the human brain, is actually wired for novelty. So we're constantly seeking out new information, and the iPad can offer that. There are lots of rewarding, what I call drill and practice games, and these have an addictive potential. When children are playing a game and they're told, well done, good job, have a star, have a badge, go to the next level, their brain is often secreting the neurotransmitter dopamine. So they naturally want more and more of these games because they become conditioned on that praise and reward. These devices are also really popular because of ease of access. They're portable, they're mobile. I can pull out mum's iPad in the waiting room at the doctor's surgery, in the cafe, when I'm having an interview at school. And the other reason, and this is where I think there's such rich potential, is that they're interactive. Kids do something and the screen responds somehow, usually. And this can be really engaging for young children. So reminder that they're a really powerful tool. And I'm going to show you some examples of why the iPad has been rapidly adopted. So this is an example with my son when he was about 18 months of age. We went to visit Nanny's school. She had the fire trucks. We took lots of photos, and at the end of the day, instead of reading a book at night, we put the photos together into a book app, this app here called My Story Bookmaker. I typed the text. That certainly wasn't my son typing text at that age. And then he recorded his voice about visiting the fire trucks at Nanny's school, and we saved this as a video. Now, this is a really empowering experience for an 18-month-old. This would be nearly impossible to do on a computer, but using a touchscreen device, we were able to add voice, add text, add photos, and save it as a video. His higher order thinking skills and his language skills were developed in this experience because he was actually creating content. In this example, using Doink screen, children can create their own green screen video. So much like the news or the weather is presented on the news at night, children and young children can create their own interactive screens. Let's see if she's going to
play. Hi! You know what a green screen effect is, right? It's used in the movies to make it look like the actors have landed on an alien planet. And it's used in TV to make it look like your local news guy is standing in front of a weather map.
So, examples of how children can create their own really professional, powerful green screen animations. And these are totally different ways of learning for children. Again, years ago, this would have required really expensive green screen equipment and a studio. Now, with an iPad, children can create these types of backgrounds and animations. I was in a school recently and some Year 6 students were researching Antarctica. They took their own photographs of artworks they'd done about Antarctica, put them in as a background, and then delivered an information report about endangered species in Antarctica with their video over the top of their own drawing. I've seen children landing on the moon and explaining what was happening using this technology. So completely and powerful ways of learning. Technology also provides instant feedback for kids. So in this example here, children can use the app to learn how to form letters correctly. Now, if they try and start to form the letter R from the wrong position, so say they were starting from the bottom of the letter R, after 3 incorrect attempts, the app provides some scaffolded feedback and says, let's start up the top here. So this is something that we call cognitive conflict. When children make an error, with some apps, not all apps, provide this type of feedback, but this is what we call a responsive app. So it says you've made a mistake, and this causes the child to reconcile the mistake instantaneously. So it stops children perpetuating mistakes. So a child that thought that forming the letter R from the bottom was the correct way now knows that that's in fact not the correct way to do it. Apps like Motion Math Hungry Guppy. In this example, children have to feed the fish the corresponding numbers on his back. So in this instance, children could feed the fish the numbers 4 and 1. They could feed him the dots 4 and 1. They could feed him other numbers float around. They could feed him 3 and 2. In this instance, there's more than one right response. So the child can interact. Now, if they feed the fish the wrong number, if it's too big or too small, the fish burps it out. So again, kids are getting that feedback, but they're actively engaging in what they're learning. This is very different to a worksheet or a textbook that says what's 4 plus 1, what's 3 plus 2. We've got really powerful ways for children to get that feedback so they can answer questions and know instantaneously whether they are right or wrong. We've got dynamic ways for children to learn new content. So digital books and book apps are a wonderful way to introduce children to new technologies and for them to engage meaningfully in the book experience. In this particular book, Nat has to travel through different scenes and to scary places. And in this, children have to explore environments and complete some tasks on behalf of Nat to advance in the book. We've also got really interactive and engaging books. This particular company, Nosy Crow, make fantastic book apps. So that's the traditional Jack and the Beanstalk fairy tale, but brought to life in an interactive and engaging way, so the reader participates in the story. We've also got huge advances in augmented reality with children. So you can now read a traditional book, so a real physical book that could stand alone, but you can also integrate new technologies that are augmented reality, like Imaginatron here, and you put your iPad over the book and it literally brings the physical book to life on your screen. So these are totally new ways of learning and reading. Just a quick couple of tips when using book apps. A few things. Look for really simple design. When it comes to book apps, in fact with all apps, but with book apps in particular, if there are too many bells and whistles, children focus on the bells and whistles and not on the story at hand. We've got some research that tells us that children's comprehension is compromised if they're reading book apps that have too many of those bells and whistles. So look for really simple design. And we also know that children's comprehension often goes down when they're reading book apps. Instead of focusing on the storyline, often parents become the technical controller when they're reading book apps with kids and say, don't tap that, don't do the jigsaw puzzle, don't swipe there, instead of focusing on making meaning from the story. So really important when book apps, look for simple design and keep asking questions as they're reading book apps so that they get meaning. I love this video. It's a really powerful reminder about why we need a balanced approach.
What do you have there?
It's a book.
Do you scroll down?
Nope. I turn the page. It's a book.
Can you blog with it?
No. It's a book.
Well, can it tweet?
No.
Can it text? Can it Wi-Fi?
Does it need a password?
No. Can it do this?
No.
It's a book.
Are you going to give it back? No, but I'll charge it up when I'm done.
You don't have to.
It's a book!
And I think that's such a powerful reminder that we need to make sure, again, I'm coming back to one of my key messages at the beginning, that we have a balanced approach. Even though we have wonderful book apps available, and I'll explore some more in this workshop, nothing beats a real book experience. So it's not about the iPad replacing or substituting real books. It's about finding that balanced approach, using both of those together. iPads also let kids explore the world in new ways. Using this particular app, children can look at all, you know, look at the heart beating and can hear the guts gurgling and lungs breathing and what the eyes can see. So children really get to figure out some of the intricacies of the human body by, again, interacting and engaging, that dynamic sort of feedback. The iPad offers great tools for children to understand really abstract or difficult to understand concepts. So this is really helpful for maths and science. Technology and iPads and apps can also make rote learning more enjoyable. Kids need to often learn their sight words or their high frequency words, and using apps like Eggy 100, it can make this a more engaging and pleasurable experience. Have to say here that we need to use these types of rote learning, I call them drill and skill type apps, use it quite sparingly with children. Children can become conditioned on that praise and reward, and remember, their brain's secreting dopamine, so they want more and more of these experiences. So we have to use these drill and skill type apps sparingly. They do have a place, and they also don't develop what we call higher order thinking skills. I can just tap on this screen and eventually get the right answer. Can you see this is a very different experience to a child creating something like the book app? And we'll go in more detail in the later workshop in module 4 when we look at what sorts of quality criteria make quality apps. We've also got, this is a brilliant app that teaches the letters of the alphabet, but teaches them meaningful sound. So children learn letter sound correspondences, but they learn new vocabulary in exciting and dynamic ways. Now, again, no substitute for hands-on language-rich experiences, but another. Remember, the iPad's just another tool in your toolkit. So another tech tip in general: always look for simple design in apps, especially with young children. If there's too much information on the screen, if there's too many bells and whistles, if there's animation, sound effects, text, it places children into what we call cognitive overload. Their brain just isn't capable of processing too much. And it's important to note that often app developers aren't always educators, so they may not know how young children's learning needs need to be met, and instead they often like to show you their technical proficiency. So they'll include all of their technical wizardry and make the app very fancy, when in fact children actually benefit from really simple, clean designs. So there we've had an introduction. In our next module, we're going to look at what the benefits are of young children using touchscreen devices.